Welcome to the CEN Show, a platform where we learn from the world community. I'm your host, Rasaki Maskani. And on the panel this evening, we have Professor Amin Ra and Brother Ahi. Our guest for this evening is a brilliant artist. His name is Michael Massenburg. And I met him through one of our team members, Barry Thomas. And they've been friends for many years since middle school, I think. Well, junior high school back then. Now it's called middle school. But
True.
then, and so Barry sent me a video of Michael on an interview, and I just was blown away with his content. He has a vast amount of information. He's a brilliant artist. He's a historian in his own right, and very well spoken, very articulate. Seemed like a real great brother, and I'm very interested in hearing about his background and the things he's been doing throughout the years. So, Brother Michael, I appreciate you being a guest on this show. You're really not a guest, you're just one of the family members. What they call it, Rod, Emoji.
Yamato.
Yamatu?
Yeah, that means second family is. Oh,
So that's
I'm
we have
honored.
this.
You
We
remember if you was there in the 70s, you the two twin brothers. But anyway, they started that.
okay. Yeah, so before you start, Michael, I just want to mention when I had a we had a nice conversation the other day, Michael and I, and we had a few things in common. So we have Long Beach State, we have the Watts Towers, and what else? We had a few other things in common, but I just know that we have a background that's kind of similar, but he got me by a few years. But go ahead, Brother Michael. Welcome and thank you for coming, brother.
Oh, my pleasure to be here. It's the kind of thing where sometimes when you time goes by go by so fast when you're doing what you're doing and stuff, and then through the years, I was like, wow, I'm just amazed and happy to be here, being in decent health and be able to continue on, if God's willing, to continue on as much as I can. I'll give a little short background as far as my, beginning and stuff. I was born in San Diego in a Navy hospital. My dad was in the Navy, and I'm only child. So, and then in San Di and that was San Diego, and then we moved up and down the coast, and then we settled in Long Beach, because of settled in Long Beach and eventually in Los Angeles and South Central area, and so that's kind of like how got me all rooted, and I think what's really interesting, but that I'm really feel blessed is that I never thought about being an artist. I didn't know what that was. It was just something I did as a kid in my own, my own room. During that time, there was no, like obviously not no internet, obviously no video games and stuff like that at the point. So it was me in my room by myself with no brothers and sisters. After I finished my homework, what I'm going to do? So I started like just drawing to entertain myself. So that was just something I just did naturally, just enjoying that experience and stuff. And then from there, things kind of as the years go by and stuff. And even when I got to high school, I was taking some art classes, but I didn't really get any instruction because it's sort of like it wasn't considered, on the high end, like say other disciplines and stuff. And so, fortunately, I had a college advisor who called me in during the senior year and in high school at Washington High School, now known as Washington Prep now, that she told me, her name was Mrs. Marbury, I'll never forget her name. And she had told me that I did have good grades. What was my plans for college? I was sitting there, I'm actually growing up really super quiet and stuff and shy, so I didn't really plan. I mean, I didn't know. To me, my idea of college was for the smart people, because a lot of my friends were taking college prep classes. And I just not, I was just floating around just kind of, day by day. And then I said, okay, I'll apply. And I ended up applying to one school. And that was really interesting because during that time, there was a large influx of African Americans with opportunity going to the university, especially through the EOP program, which was significant. That's how I got in. And I did choose Long Beach because they did have an art department, but I still wasn't connected to anything in the community. There was already art flourishing in the neighborhoods, but I wasn't, a part of that and stuff. Didn't wasn't aware of it. And then even in school, like I said, growing up, it was something to do. Like the teacher would give assignment, do this, do a drawing and stuff. So I was always busy doing drawings for some friends and also for the class and stuff. But again, had no concept about what it is for what eventually was going to end up doing. And then so once I came to Long Beach, a couple of things well, I share with a lot of friends who were there in Long Beach at that time, how the Black Studies Department, the Black Conscious Conference, and also some of the historical events happened while we were there have definitely shaped a lot of why I'm into history, why I'm about doing imagery about our stories and our histories and our futures, But in that time, obviously it wasn't developed yet in regards to what that would be in the future. But I did become very much interested in our history because a lot of history growing up, regularly in regular schools, I really wasn't into it, obviously, because there wasn't a lot of stories they talked about. I mean, like for instance, we used to celebrate Columbus Day, and we know what that really means now, as opposed to all your life you've been told like this person discovered America. We now realize like people were already here. You came and took over and disrupted the whole ecosystem, the whole culture, the whole everything to recreate it in this whole new thing we call the United States of America, So I got a lot of information in regards to the Black Studies class, and particularly in Ross class was also beneficial because one of our assignments was we were going to do tutoring, and with some of the kids in the neighborhood in Compton. I think we went to Centennial. We probably met there and kind of he laid out the plan. It was on a weekend. I think it was on a Saturday or something like that. And I didn't really realize till now how that shaped me how I am now, but during that time that was just part of the requirements. But it was also a thing. It was like calling. You start working with kids and stuff, which was so important. And we actually ended up doing a lot of those tutoring at the library, And so yeah, that was the early parts of the Long Beach experience. And also I was there too on the campus when Ron Settles was murdered by the Signal Hill police. That was a major, major thing that hit not only the area but also across the country. And I remember a number of us got a chance to be part of the protests and stuff. And we walked from to the park. Just like the things we see that's kind of like been normalized now. But being a part of that at that time wasn't even thinking about like what it meant in the bigger scheme thing around the world, around the country and stuff like that. And so Long Beach itself, the school was like its own city anyway. There was a lot of stuff that was going on, but it was a lot of great stuff. And so that definitely helped me to shape my early beginnings. And so once I got there, I had to look at, like interested in the art department, but I didn't do all that well. I got a lot of C's in the class, so I had a lot of doubt because I was thrown into one of the most popular art departments in the whole, if not the state, the whole country, as far as in regards to students that's coming there and getting their degrees and also become professionals, especially in design and graphic design, stuff like that. And so I did, like I said, a lot of C's, but I did have one teacher. His name was John DeHaris. He was in the art department. He helped me a lot. In fact, he was the first person to ever push me into really working. I didn't know about what it was to work hard in whatever discipline or thing you had interest in. It was just something I just did on my own. I didn't know there was levels to it. And again, I didn't didn't know about galleries, museums growing up and stuff like that. So I did that. And then eventually I decided to not pursue a degree in art. I decided to pursue a degree in business, and focus on marketing because my dad and I opened up a business together. First it was a DJ server called Mass Production. We did parties and events during that time. So and then also too, and eventually that evolved into an apprentice sportswear in downtown Englewood, where we segued from the DJing to being a full-on store selling licensed apparel, especially during the 80s. We're talking about Lakers back-to-back, Magic Johnson, the Olympics, Prince Purple Rain, Michael Jackson's Thriller, Ghostbusters, the Raiders were in town. So we had a lot of business that was geared towards screen printing and embroidery. So actually we were doing work on computers, so I guess we didn't know it, but I guess we were probably pioneers in that, in doing that type of thing, that type of work in that business. So we did that, and then so that kind of like it kind of grew. We got really busy and stuff. We did clients where it's like Whirler Curls, our client with KH Radio. We had some of the boxers who were professional boxers who would come in with their managers stuff and promoters and stuff, and we did stuff for them for their role. So we did a lot of stuff that kept us really, really growing and developing stuff. And then but one of the last Black Studies class I took was actually a Black Arts class, and that was in the Black Studies department. That was the first time I ever saw a book on Black arts, even though they were around, but they were kind of scarce. There's only a few at that time that was actually published, and this was Black artists, and it was written by the late Smella Lewis and Ruth Waddy, and they went across country to interview artists, and they had images of their work and their profiles and stuff. So for me, as a young kid, looking at this, like that's the first time I seen Black out art outside of maybe one artist. And the artist that I knew about before was the late Charles White, who used to teach at Otis School of Art in downtown. And now it's been relocated to in Westchester. And so at that time, so I said, like, I'm deep into the business, but I decided to take that class, and so it was kind of interesting. So there was a professor by name of the Silver. And he was really cool and stuff like that, tall, slender brother and stuff like that. And so I was able to get full of the art with the books that we were covering and talking about those artists and stuff like that, not knowing there was a good number of these artists were in Los Angeles already. So I had no exposure to that at all. So one of the things he did, he what the Silvers did was invite his class to come to the Watchtower's Art Center because he's painting the class. I mean, he was going to be a class of light drawing. So I said, I think I want to do that. So I did that. The interesting thing is that when I got there, that was my first time at the Watchtowers. And the interesting thing was I grew up about like 5 to 7 minutes nearby on the other side of the freeway. So I was close to it and didn't know it was even there. And so once I got there, and the Silvers was like teaching class, and then I walk into the classroom in the middle of the night, I hear nothing but jazz and Black people painting. I'd never seen them before in my life. So that kind of changed my whole perspective on things and stuff like that. So that's the part I'll stop there, because that just give you the part from growing up to Cal State Long Beach, and there's other chapters too after that, but I want to give you a ch chance to chime in on it, because we can go on
And
forever.
so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go to the panel, see if they have any questions or comments, and then I have something I want to ask you about that I want you to speak on. So,
Yes.
okay, Brother Ahi.
Yes, brother. I just what comes to my mind when I think of political art, I remember this poster. It had a poster of like Norman, and he's a white guy, the Rockwell guy, and it had the
Oh,
little
yes.
sister. Had a little
Yes.
sister, had the book in her hand,
Yes, very common.
and I think the cops was escorting her to school. And with your art, do you are you taking on current events and using those as inspiration for your art? Or are you just a general political subject matter?
It's practically I'm a little bit all of above. In the early years when I got started, when I decided to become an artist some years later after the business after the business closed down, I decided to go up to the Watchtowers Art Center, and I went there and I was talking to someone at the front desk and we had a great conversation and he said he remembered me. But I remember him because it was like an 8 year section between the first time I was at the Watchtowers Art Center and the second time I came. Because by then I was like I was in business, so I wasn't even practicing art or looking at art anymore like that. And when I came back, I got a chance to meet one of the director at the time, John Otterbridge, who has a reputation in the city in regards to being one of the top artists we ever had, in regards to not only him being a director, but also he was an artist, he was a mentor, he was a little bit of everything. And so also too, I was starting to learn about the history of the Watchtowers, where the art that came out of there. And that was politicized after the 1965 Watts Rebellion. And so, and then I got a chance to talk to some of the poets, they had the writers' workshop, and then you had musicians, you had Mufundi Institute, you had like, it became like this melting pot of art and stuff. And one of the first arts that came out of the Watts Rebellion was or put together by the late Noah Purefoy at the time, who was the director before John Otterbridge, and Justin Powell, who they worked together, and then also just about also worked with John too, and so when I start asking questions and researching stuff, and I start like, and then also meeting some of the artists that were actually here, like one of my close friends and mentor is Falun D from the Watts Prophets, and we talk regularly and stuff, and the stories he shares and how he was and he's still active today, so I'm glad that he's here to be able to share it for the next generation. And there were other ones too. I mean, there's so many poets, writers, musicians. There's like Horace Tapscott and his band. And so I start to get a little bit of that from being at the Watchtower and studying that. And another mentor of mine was the late Cecil Ferguson, who grew up in Watts and became a curator at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art during the time. And he had retired when I met him, but he retired from the museum, but he did not retire from doing art shows and events and gathering artists together. And so I got a chance to be under the wings of the Cecil Ferguson and all the John Otterbridge and start like growing from there because they were very active. Some things were political in the artwork, and some things were political in the in what they created out of nothing. Because, like I said, like what one of the things again, when I go back to Justin Powell and Noah Purefoy, they went in the streets and found burnt pieces of wood, broken glass, materials and stuff, picked it up, put it together, and made art out of it. And then it got to a point that became so popular that it started exhibiting those artworks throughout the state, And actually, the most famous piece that's actually in Watts at the Watchtowers was done before the Watts Rebellion, which is the Watchtowers itself, which you see the beams go up in the air, and was put together by Simon Radia. And so, And he was a day laborer, and for decades he worked, and after he get off work, he started building these towers. And if you haven't been to the Watchtowers, you need to go, because
Oh, we knew,
there's
yes.
nothing in the state of and no, nothing in the United States of America that's like that, because that was purely coming from his culture, from being an Italian immigrant. But he did everything by hand, and then when he left, that is so big and so immense that the city cannot move it, so they just left it. And so that artwork has inspired many artists like me, and then also artists that we have, like one of our elders, Betty Saar, who's still living with us. She's in her upper 90s. She was from the area, along with her family. And so in going to your, answer your question, so that started to happen, as far as me thinking about what I want to do. And then I start wanting to tell stories that I heard a little bit about. Like, I start doing art pieces myself. And now we're talking about like the early 90s, when I really started getting rooted into it. And then we had Rodney King and Latosha Harlan. So that was added on top of that. And so I started doing artwork based upon my response and my experience, and whether it be things that happened for me or was happening as I was looking at it, so.
Right. Just one more question. I heard this sister, she was talking about art. I forget who her name is. And she said all black art here in America is inherently political. What do you think about that?
I agree with that statement. Like, well, there's black artists who don't do, like, for instance, you talked about Norman Rockwell. Like, he was an illustrator for some of the top magazines through the decades before. That's so him doing that illustration was normal for him, because it's for all of Americans, because that's sort of like he didn't always do political works. But I've been reading about him, it's like he always was very conscious, and that's why he did that piece. So by doing it, obviously, and he's not an African American artist, but it didn't matter because of that point, because that's probably the only way that piece would have got on the cover, because Norman Rockwell did the New Yorker and stuff like that for decades. So he had some pull, so he was able to do that. The idea, there's two ways to look at that. So one, sometimes it's the imagery of what we create, and they say, oh, okay, that's that black figure. Oh, that's there's this symbolism that's there. And then there's artists who do what's called abstraction. They might be mixing colors, design, and it may not be recognizable, but they still are politicized because, one, it's made by a black artist. And a lot of times some of those works end up next to their contemporary artists, that in the same area, and then they kind of be mixed together. And so, yeah, I think just by saying you want to be an artist, whether you're a writer, singer, dancer, poet, painter, anything that's outside of what we've been taught and what we've been programmed to think and do, inherently makes us, like, out the box, and it is political. And some of the most beautiful poems and stuff is precise and say one line, and it does everything. So that's why at times, like, artists are the ones that the government try to. Matter of fact, one of the Watts Writing Workshop that was burnt down by someone who was paid by the FBI through the COINTELPRO, which I knew about the COINTELPRO because of what I learned at Long Beach. And it comes up every now and then on social media and YouTube and stuff like that. And there's a clip on the guy that actually burnt it down, a black guy, but he was like, probably didn't have any money, and they probably took him in. Hey, we'll pay you money if you burn this building down, and he did it. So yeah, just by us, we can do a flower in this revolutionary political, because we're doing it.
Right. Well put. Thank you, sir.
Excellent questions, IE. Sister Linda, how you doing this evening? Can you unmute? I will come back to you. Brother Barry's here. Brother Barry. You want to greet your brother, and then do you have any comments or questions?
Yes. Hey, what up, Brother Mike?
Oh, look, what's up? What's up?
You got it. Hey, I'm just happy to be here and have a chance to talk with you. Obviously, we go back a long way, but it's wow, man, long way, you know. And Arthur, but I want to know, you know, for you, how heavy was your influences, you know, to drive you into the art thing? Because back then, and today I remember you and your dad had a, you know, had the t-shirt company.
Yep.
But what drove you back to the art? And you also was the mobile DJ.
Yep. Yeah, that I think was really interesting. I'm kind of glad to have that role trajectory going that direction, was because completely the opposite of being an artist is being a business person, you know. But you know, as far as DJing, that's still art a little bit, you know, with the music and stuff. But as far as once I did the shop, I had like a staff of high school students, and then so I was learning about, you know, management, stuff like that, learn about promotion and advertising, learn how to move. Like, for instance, let's say, so it was a lot of little things I learned there. And so we did pretty well for quite a while, and then eventually decided to close it down. And then from there, I decided looking at what I'll do next. So I ended up taking some different jobs and stuff like that in the similar industries. And actually, it was a point I was driving super shuttle vans for part time, and I remember I was waiting to go into the airport to pick up people, you know, to take them to the hotels or home and stuff. And right now, this is probably the late '80s. Then by that point now, and I was bored, you know, and then you know, waiting to go into the airport. So I had a paper and pencil, and it had like a little book on the side. And I picked it up, and since we're on a break, I started just drawing. And I haven't drawn anything about 8 or 9 years because I was focusing on the business. And after I finished drawing, I was surprised that you know, that it came out good. It was like, wow, I was like, I haven't drawn anything. Like, okay, I can still do this. And then the bub went on. That was probably the best thing that happened to me, because in the early years, and I did mention to our audience about, and there was two teachers during that point in the art thing that helped me to really light the bulb and stuff. So now I'm now in the late 80s. Here I'm now a young adult. I went through, went through having the business stuff. And also during all the time too, another thing that was happening in the community that we can't avoid is the crack epidemic, which was in the 80s. So there was a lot of casualty to that. So we having all these different things going on. But as I was doing the drawing and stuff, I said, you know what? I think I want to do art. So I decided to redo it. So I went back to the towers, and that's where I met John Otterbridge. I mean, you know, well, he remembered me, but I don't remember him at that time. And so we got connected to that, and everything started to grow up from there. I started asking questions, and I started volunteering and working with a lot of different of the elders and stuff, and the artists who were doing, like, you know, really great work, you know, in the field and stuff. So because before I didn't have a passion, it was just something I just did as a kid. So that's why it was easy for me to kind of float off and do something I didn't love, or like I was going to get a regular job like everybody else. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when once I had a taste of running my own business, and then I want to do this art all of a sudden, and that was the best time for me to combine those two experiences together to do the art, because I became, it was like, I'm doing this regardless. It wasn't like it don't work out. I decided to, I gotta make this work.
Okay. And the other thing is too, man, one last question, that, you know, you
I didn't hear anything.
And see your murals out there, and
hey, Barry,
the things that you are using.
Barry, I made a mistake. I muted. So go ahead and ask that again, please.
Okay. And Mike.
Yes.
Okay. I want to ask you, man, I mean, 'cause I know, you do a lot of mural work, and and you do mural work all over the United States and other parts of the world as well. And I always just take notice when I'm riding around, in the city and see your artwork, whether it was at the artwork at the Forum or the artwork at the Intuit Dome or on Central Avenue for South Central Jazz, and see your artwork up on buildings that you've done and those on those murals at Inglewood. I mean, everywhere. And my question is, what really got you into doing those big projects like that, those big mural projects?
That's a great question. No, it's funny. No one ever asked that question. I'm surprised. But it's you, so I'm not surprised. So I guess two things was that especially during the time going from the late 80s going to the early 90s and stuff, I was trying to find a footing. In fact, for a lot of artists my generation, there wasn't a lot of markets for us, so we decided to band together and create our own shows, create our own opportunities and stuff. And we had a group called The Collective, which is a group of African American artists in LA. And so we started creating our own stuff, and we partnered with oh, going blank, not, with the Watts right down Central. I'm going blank, man. I guess I got to get, I've been talking so much, I kind of like, so with the Watkins family, with the Watts,
Oh, WLCC, Ted Watkins.
yes, that's it. It's, I don't know why I went blank as much as that. So we were working with them and stuff, and so by thinking about what murals can do, I started thinking about, like, one was like a lot of us, we didn't go to galleries and museums, or wasn't aware of it, even though there was people who have as far as our community. So I wanted to tell stories that way. And the other thing that was even more that also was helpful was that my artwork was, I'll do art shows, but that don't mean you're going to sell work. And not that I had to sell work, but when the city and the county and even across the country, they had these programs for murals or public art. We mean in public art, it could be sculpture too. And so there's like a you get paid for it. I said, okay, I think I can work this and learn how to, work with the materials as far as painting and also other materials and stuff. And so two people was very instrumental in me doing it in that field. One was Charles Dixon, who's still active today. He did a sculpture, and also he was instrumental in helping me do my first commission work in Kansas City, actually, in 1996 and 97, and it was for the American Jazz Museum on 18th and Vine. So I learned about that history and stuff. So I started getting engaged in the history, because that history I didn't know. I knew a little about some of the basic history, but not that particular history of Kansas City, which is rich, but it had like Charlie Parker and, Count Basie come from that region. And so with the idea of like, I can make it into a business was important, because I said, well, I did art shows and I would sell my artwork at art fairs and art events and stuff like that, like in Baldwin Hills. I was part of that in the early 90s and stuff. And, but I think what was really good about the, me going to the mural side is like that actually, if you're doing that, you actually have to be in business. They want you to have a business license, you got to put together a budget, you have to have meetings with the community, all these different things, which things I was used to, which I know is not easy for artists, because some of us are could be pretty shy and or not really exposed to all that. But for me, it was natural, easy for me to segue into to the mural market. I can tell my stories. I can meet with communities and stuff. I can encourage, it was a lot. It fit my personality at the time in my latter years as opposed to my earlier years. So, yeah.
Appreciate that one, man. And I know I said that one more. But I just want to let you know, man, I appreciate, the time that you put in and the time that you put in, with my pops. As you know, my pops,
Yes.
had a professional business, but he was an artist as well. And he used to always paint, those murals on the building across the street, whether it was depicting different kind of scenes and I remember when he had put up the stuff on the Rodney King thing, and he had painted, and then in 3 nights it go by, and then the city would come paint it out, and he put
Yes.
it right back, you know. And at the end, we got into some of the things. He say, "Look, you can't. It's his building. You can't tell him what to do." And at the end of the day, you know, Mark was just trying to say it reflects how the community felt. And I just really respect that time you put in with Pops, man. It meant a lot to me. Thank you, brother. Thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Anytime.
All right. Thanks, Brother Barry. Linda, are you
Thank
available
you, Brother
now?
McKee.
Linda, are you available? Okay. Linda's probably just listening. So Michael, I wanna do something. I wanna ask Professor Rob a question, if you don't mind.
Oh, go ahead, please do.
And then I know he has something he wants, you know, ask or comment about. So, Professor Rob, I don't know if anybody, I know somebody asked you this before, but I never heard you answer this. The influence and the impact you had on so many people throughout the years, because mostly everybody that come on here that know you darn near say the same thing, that you had a tremendous amount of impact on kind of changing, you know, change the direction of their life, or had a heavy influence with their, you know, way of thinking or being. So when you think about that, you touch, I would say, if not thousands, hundreds of thousands of people in the span of what, probably from 65 until now. So how did that make you feel, or what does that do for you?
No, first of all, thanks for the question, Rashid. You do it for the movement. You do it because you love your people, and you're just trying to create a sense of consciousness and discipline. Because I came up in Watts and Compton, and I was street. And I didn't want my kids, or I didn't want the young people that I had contact with to fall off their ambitions or goals, because it was easy to do that. From high school all the way up to practically colleges, it was easy for people to fall off. So my personal experiences growing up, I had a lot of mentors, different ones for different strategies throughout, that gave me the game. And the game is to give back and what you know, teach others. It's the same thing as your thing, each one teach one. And so I looked at all the brothers and sisters as family. And I tried to talk to them and treat them like that. And I see, to me, Black studies never really became, well, the whole purpose of Black studies was to teach freedom and exercise a sense of power, particularly at a predominantly white school. And we turned it into a community, a Black community. Where we supported each other, tutored each other, service, things of this nature. But I didn't feel that. I felt that that was natural, that everybody's supposed to get in position to help other brothers and sisters. That's the way we came up in during the movement. There was a Black arts movement during the 60s. There was theater arts and fine arts. And I know John Oliver as well, Mark Green. He went to Long Beach State. He gave me an art piece, and I don't know whatever happened to it. It was a beautiful thing as a project. But Mark was a director over there. Watts Tower, I'm giving back to the brother. See, when we was coming up, I went to Ritter. We walked right past Watts. Watchtower didn't become well known until after the rebellion. And then the Italian that built it used none but glass, they used bottles. If you ever go to the Watchtower, that's all you see is a bunch of bottles and whatever he could find to put it together. And we didn't know that they was going to designate it as a historical place at that time. But we just walked by it, before the Watts Rebellion. And then after that, they used to have drummers' days there where the Congo players would be there, jazz concerts there. But the parking was atrocious. I mean, it was just a little narrow street, and you had to park way down and walk back and all of that. But they used to have marketplaces there, and it was just a beautiful thing, especially under John Arterbury. But the brother before him had events. And so, it was just a beautiful thing. But what I want to say to Brother Massengale, I really appreciate him pursuing art, because art means freedom. And you can paint the sun purple. It's your creativity, and art was very essential in our liberation movement. The artists, as he mentioned, the Watts prophets, the last poets, not counting the other arts that people pursued. And I'm just glad that he's making these murals, because he has consciousness, because he came to the movement, like he mentioned, the Black Consciousness Conference, and him and Barry. And so I know his art speaks to the people, and that's a beautiful thing, brother. And you got to keep it up. I know you got to make some money while you're doing it, but at the same time, it's beautiful because, like I said, art is liberation. That's what De Silva used to say, art is liberation, because the artists can do whatever they want to do. It's what they see. And then they explain it to others if they need to. But the beauty of the art is people being creative, and coming up and skill. They make Kobe murals and basketball murals and here and there. But most of the time, they try to make a mural that have a message. And they know the message. It was a big, long mural on Crenshaw.
Oh, yeah.
That was a historical mural. That, I don't know how long it was. Right there by Doolin's and things of that nature. And man, it was just a beautiful thing. So the art speaks to you. Now, then gang art came in, and street art came in, and they started calling it graffiti and things of this nature, but some of that art had a message in it, too, so I just appreciate you, brother, for pursuing that, and we know we got a conscious brother dealing with the art, and that's a good thing from that standpoint. I remember your interview where you was talking about you lived down the street from where Sam Cooke was killed.
Yep.
From the hotel. And you lived down the street where Latasha Harding. Mm-hmm. But the Latasha Harding case, they didn't let the white woman or the Asian woman off. They found her guilty, but the judge gave her probation. And that's what set people off. And the same thing with Rodney King, as you were saying. It was a white boy named Holiday that filmed Rodney King. And they ended up arresting him, with his video. And the Watts and the LA 92 was different from LA 65. Because LA 92 was multicultural people and families was out there. When LA 65 was mostly black men out there, you understand? But still, you can tell by how many people were arrested and how many people were shot and killed. The difference in LA 92. Mostly Latinos were killed in LA 92. But anyway, getting back to your art, brother, keep pushing. keep pushing that brush, keep pushing it, because we need brothers like you on the art side, you know, to keep the art movement going throughout. And it's not, you like Barry was saying, the jazz concerts, the Merck Park, all those, we got a lot of centers for art that people, they have art festivals all the time, brother. And I'm pretty sure I know down in Laguna, they have a big art festival.
Sure.
So, you know, it's just good to see you with your creativity, brother. And I just say, I'm glad that you were part of the Long Beach State movement with Barry and Thaibe and Ijao and all the brothers that made up that movement when we, you know, stood strong on the campus. And I'm glad you was there during the 80s, especially the Ron Settles case.
Oh, yeah.
But before that, it was Roland Peterson. And before that, it was, after that, it was Tony Wilkins got killed, who was president of BSU before. But anyway, it was just good to see you, brother. And I'm glad Barry hooked us up. And, you know, whenever you need to come on and discuss some things, you're welcome.
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead, Archie.
All right. I appreciate it, Professor Ron. Brother Michael, I want to just do something a little bit here. I'm improvising. So I'm going to go to some of your work.
Okay.
And I want you to pick out, I'm going to just scroll and you stop me.
Okay.
Pick out a piece and I want you to discuss that piece with us.
Okay.
Yeah. So, because you have, I looked through here and it was just, and I showed everybody. I shared the screen with everybody.
Of course, this is going to be the first one.
Oh, you want to talk about the first one?
I have to.
Okay, let's go for it.
The name of the piece is called 1965. I was actually too young to understand what was happening because I'm on the other side of the freeway. What I do remember, because I was probably like 5 years old, I do remember sitting on my parents' porch. So we lived exactly on Figueroa and 98th, about like across from the elementary school, which is 97th Street before. Now is, I think it's Charles Burnett School now. And I remember sitting on a porch and I see these two Jeeps that will drive by the alley in front of by the house and parked in the middle of the street. Our street was pretty wide. We have because of the power lines and stuff. So unlike most streets, it'd be kind of narrow. So it's wide. So you can almost park a car in the middle of the street. So there was these two Jeeps. They drove through by the alley and they parked their Jeeps right nearby me as I sit on the porch. I'm sitting there fascinated because I had no idea what's going on. But as a 5-year old, I'm thinking about like G.I. Joes and toy soldiers and, you know, because we've been taught through all kind of that other stuff, you know. That tells you how much the imagery has been drilled into us, and I think now as kids, with, you know, toy guns and, you know, and cowboys and Indians. So I think it goes to the same mindset, I guess, how we've been programmed and they don't even know it. I'm sitting there like, had no idea what was going on, but I remember my mom talked about it. That was the most fearful she'd been in her life. Even though we were on the other side where you didn't see any of the things happening because, like I said, we were like 5 to 7 minutes away from the Watts area on the other side. So through the years, in early years, I wanted to tell different stories. And I'll tell you what's really interesting about this. I worked in what's called collage, which means so I have drawing, painting, I might add photographs to it, I might just newspaper clippings. And actually, that particular piece has to tell you how things kind of work out, because I know when I was working on the piece, I had a friend of mine had a gallery over in the Crenshaw area and stuff, and he was doing remodeling, and he said, "Oh, Mike, it's like I've been going through these walls and stuff. There's these newspapers. It may be something you can use, you know." So he was, you know, building a doorway and stuff, and creating another doorway for his space. And he took out these crumbled up pieces of newspaper. It was actually this piece right here. It was actually the actual newspaper that was in the wall for insulation all that time. So I looked at it and I said, like, and I already had started working on this piece already. And I looked at it and said, oh man, this is actually the real newspaper. And it's kind of old, it's yellow. It was perfect. Not only because it was an actual newspaper, but because of the color of it, it was already yellowed and brown because of deterioration. And it was perfect for me to kind of add those different elements. So it was interesting how that came to being just by, you know, I'll say it has to be spirit, because I couldn't find that newspaper clipping anywhere. I wouldn't even know it existed, because I'm like, but again, I was already working on this piece and it kind of just showed up. So during that time, I was doing a lot of stuff like this piece. I did a piece on the LA chapter of the Black Panthers, because I know I was hearing a lot of different stories about what happened at UCLA. And so I was always been intrigued in regards to doing stuff that's in the neighborhood. Because like what Professor Raw mentioned, there's so much history in our front yard. We don't have to go far. You know, it's right there in front of us. You know?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. Thank you, Papa. Okay. So that's it for that piece.
Yeah, I don't want to be our lecture on that piece, but it could be. I have to edit myself. That's why.
So now, when we talked before, you know, I know you have a lot of art. You know, they mentioned I know Barry mentioned it, and I don't know if you mentioned it, the Intuit Dome. You have a painting there.
Yeah, that's probably, that's the newest piece and is the biggest piece. And it's probably the most visible, because there's other pieces I have around LA in schools and parks. But the one in Intuit Dome that was done in last year. In 2024, that'll probably be one that people probably will see more often, because it's large and it's on a major busy street off of Century and Prairie, you know. And what was good about that piece is that they kind of they had ideas and stuff, but they didn't try to make me do something. So sometimes the client would say, we want it like this and that. That's why, like, I usually work with projects where I have it's going to be a vision that I see. In this case, they have pre-selected some artists already. And because I'm active in Inglewood, so had an impact on why I was one of seven artists and stuff. And the thing that was a blessing was, it's the most visible piece of anybody can see. If they want to see one work, that might be the best piece, because, like I said, there's parks. I'm in Van Ness Park. I'm at Mark Twain Library. I'm at the Ellie Home off near Florence, in that area and stuff like there. There's also, so I have a lot of stuff that's kind of scattered out, but you have to be at those locations. And this right here is very visible because it's on Prairie. And Century, and it's a very busy, obviously, because the Intuit Dome and the traffic, and it's a walking distance, almost not that far from the SoFi. So I wanted to do something about the community. So I said I want to make it kind of light, where I do like dancing, music, also athletics, and sort of like playing basketball, could be soccer, playing tennis. Then I have some cultural stuff in there. I have dancers in there. So, and I have, some of the people are actually friends of mine. I have like a young musician, part of a marching band and stuff like that we had, like, from the high school. So I wanted to kind of make it it has some different elements of multicultural, but it's okay, because the thing that was important to me was, no matter how the community changed, that piece would still be there. You know, and because it's done on materials, like it was done on steel, so it won't fade, it won't get graffiti, it's large, it's easy to see. I said I want to make sure that that I would like to have pieces that have long lasting. Because sometimes pieces don't last long because they can get graffiti or something happened to a building, they'll tear a building down. It can be any number of things because I have other artworks and stuff that has disappeared. You know, like I did Central Avenue in the early 2000s, and we're talking about bringing that back, of that history, of the jazz festival, stuff like that.
All right, excellent, excellent. So we definitely want to have you back on so we could talk about more more history and want to see a lot of your art. I gave the audience a preview of what you had on your website, and it was very nice. So we can get into that on a later date. I'll go around one more time if you have time.
Sure, I got time.
Anybody, see if anybody have any additional questions or comments. So, Brother Ahi, you have any additional questions or comments before we leave?
No, I just sitting here looking at some of his work on the TV. I thought I'd kind of look at it while he was talking, and he is prolific. Man, you a really prolific guy. I'm just looking at this one piece, the Massenburg art drone clip.
Okay.
What?
There's a lot of different stuff. I do stuff on family, obviously what's happening in LA, what's happening around the country, and even other countries too that I got a chance to travel to. That's a whole nother story.
Well, what is this about this dance? Four excerpts from Evolve Suite.
Oh man. Let's see. I've always been fascinated in regards to anything that's cultural that we do, the dancing, the singing, and also into like including some of writings at times. So it depends on when I'm doing it and how I'm going to be doing it. Some things I do research on, and some things are just like, I already know what I want to do. And so that's why like so many different things have these different stories and different messages and stuff. It's kind of like, I don't know, I've been doing it for so long. You got me thinking now. I was like, wow. I was like, why did I do that? You know? but it all comes down to the whole intention of making sure our voices are heard, whether it be from the past history, whether it be present time, and even in the future. So I'm going to put us in all different phases of it, you know, because there's so many stories that haven't been told. I'm not going to be able to tell them all, but I can tell you the ones that, especially ones that I have some kind of relationship to, I can really dive in deep, you know. So it's very, very important. And there'll be some more stuff coming up too, but I'm not finished yet, so I'll keep everybody posted. The new stuff's coming up, probably coming within the next year.
And your work is available where?
As far as for the public art, it's all throughout the city. As actually, what's going to happen probably eventually, there's going to be some a map being made about in regards to, because there's so many different artists around doing stuff. And one artist I had to bring out his name because he was very, very instrumental in me doing murals. His name was Richard Wyatt. He passed away in 2024. And I got a chance to see him before his passing and share and thanking him because he was one of the early black artists that was doing murals. Not only just doing murals, but he's also doing it professionally too. I mean, he would do like the Union Station in downtown, Capitol Records. And I got a chance to work on the Capitol Records ones he did. Also at the, I mean, it's, his artwork is throughout the city, and people don't really. Oh, Inglewood High School. There's a mural of Native Americans on the side on Manchester. He's been a great help in me seeing how it's done through his experience. So yeah, it's again, everything is so multi-layered. It's kind of hard. Sometimes I'm starting thinking about what it means, and by getting these great questions tonight, things I haven't really thought about a lot. I've just been doing intuitively, just without even thinking, like, oh, I'm going to do this. I got to make this.
What about private collections?
Oh yeah, I've always been doing shows off and on through the years. Some gallery shows and stuff through the years. The exhibit at the California African American Museum, different places like that. I still will continue doing those. But yeah, and then also too, my studios is in Inglewood, and usually every year we used to have an open studio, but we didn't have it this year. We kind of we reorganized where we invite the communities come in our studios, like have these conversations and see the work, and there's like books, there's prints, and there's original work, there's small pieces, large pieces. And I enjoy obviously talking about the art and stuff like that. And I enjoy appreciate when people have an interest in it because we're not really, when it comes to the visual arts, we're not really have got a chance to really understand the power of the visual arts until the last few years. As far as like it was a great example of the Rockwell piece, and that was for all of America. But when it comes to people, I say that probably one of the most famous pieces that people didn't realize was a real painter was painting. They thought it was JJ's painting on Good Times,
Yeah,
and that's
Barnes.
Ernie Barnes, and also Ernie Barnes did a album cover, I Want You, of Marvin Gaye. So so we knew about him, but the rest of the world didn't know about it until like about a couple of years ago. I know Eddie Murphy was talking about it, and a few other people talked about it. It was in the auction and it went to some crazy amount of money. And even then, I can't remember what the numbers amount. Even then, the estimate value was a lot lower. It was a lot lower because he was a black artist and he actually didn't, he was known in the community, but he wasn't like all in the museum. He was in some of the museums after he passed, and there's books written about him, so he's been talked about more. But it's really, it's one of those things where I'm definitely doing all kind of ways and doing art. And also, I didn't mention also do like teaching too. I've been teaching different schools and locations and stuff and parks and stuff. So anything's art related. And I mentioned before, part of artist group and organizing that. We're going to be talking about stories about how we organized in the beginning 2000s and what we were doing now, based upon a lot of our mentorship and stuff. And yeah.
Do you have like lithographs or something like a person like me, I could or admirer could purchase, or are you only dealing with
Yes, I
original?
have some. I have some of those, and then I have like regular posters too. I have books and stuff. So yeah, I'm always conscious about meeting with everybody is because because I also buy art too. So I said, man, I want that get that work. Was like I can't do that. And I was like, oh, I love this work here. And it's like perfect. I want. So my thing is also the business side of me has been very important in regards to having things that's available for the public, whether it be large commission work in the home or be like you said, lithograph, limited edition, or even a poster, and like I said, I even have a self-published book that I did when I went to Senegal for residency. So I have that available too. And so there's a lot of things. I do have a little bit for everybody.
Available where?
It's on my website. You can go to it's at Beacon's Art Building. Is at 808 North La Brea, near La Brea and Centinela. Used to be it's this big gigantic building. Used to be storage. Now it's an artist studio. It's like four floors. So I'm here a lot unless I'm traveling or working on a mural. But if you go to my website, send me a message, and we can definitely link up.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Thank you.
Okay, Barry, any last words?
No, I'm good. Thanks for your time, Mike.
Appreciate it. More to come.
Ron, you on mute.
First of all, again, I want to say we really appreciate you being on the show and doing your thing, and discussing your profession and your murals and things of this nature. But see, most artists, they don't like to sell their pieces. Many of them, because they put a price on it to make you shake your head.
True.
You understand? Because of the creativity. But Linda said she couldn't get her mic working. She's
Okay.
down in Florida. That's why she couldn't come on. And
Okay.
she wants you to say your website.
Okay. Yeah, michaelmassenberg.com. Maybe, we can probably,
He
I
can
guess
put
there could be some way we can probably send her the information and stuff as far as
Yeah.
and so yeah, Florida. Matter of fact, I have actually done stuff in Florida. I went part of Florida. I did a couple in Daytona Beach. And I did stuff at also at Bethune-Cookman. That was a few years back. So I'm familiar with some parts of Florida for sure.
Well, good. But again, man, just keep on pushing, man, and like we say, and art has always played a major role in our movement, in art, in our movement, because they have so much freedom. It may be theater arts or fine arts. You get a doctorate in you only can get a doctorate of in art and history of the art. Everything else is an MFA, Masters of
True.
Arts, and that's what De Silva had. He had two of them. He's one of my closest friends. I'm just glad that you are keeping the art alive, but it speaks to you. It speaks to you, and we need artists, conscious artists. So I'm glad you were here to explain what you do with the murals, and maybe some of them you have to do for money for people that want things. But at the same time, I know that you just love to put messages up in your art. So I appreciate it. All right.
So, thank you.
All right.
All right. Brother Michael, any last words from you before
Thank
we
you.
continue another time? Because we definitely
Yes, for
want to come
sure. We
back
can do
on.
this again. For sure. I mean, because I know it's a lot covered, in a short period of time, which is like sometimes, oh man, going back from a kid up until now, that's a lot to cover, I know. But we at least it gave everybody at least a little bit of a sample. And we can do it again. We can do certain things and stuff. We can do something that could be have a theme for it or something like that, conversation. Because there's a lot of important conversations need to be taken, within ourselves as far as how we want to move forward in this world based upon what's going on. So.
Okay, well, we appreciate you, man. Really, we do. And I definitely want to talk to you. Can you stay on for about a few minutes?
Sure.
Okay. So now, Professor Rob,
Yeah.
anything for Tuesday?
I'm trying to get Akili back on.
Okay.
Black Lives Matter.
Okay.
I'll confirm it by tomorrow. All right.
So we have a few things going on. I'm going to share the screen. So we have a show tomorrow. We have a Roots Reggae Reasoning session with Brother Einstein Brown. So he's our guest for tomorrow for the Roots Reggae Reasoning session. And then, as you can see, Ernest McBride family, they have an exhibit in Long Beach. Anybody go on the website and get that information. And then next week, next Wednesday, we have Sister Sophia hosting, and we got Brother Inky Rio coming on. Inky Rio. So that's what we got going on. Thanks again, Brother Michael. And we're going to take our pause, each one teach one in Conscious Corner. Everybody continue to have a great day.
Hey, Rush, you asked me one more question. Linda wanted to ask.
Okay, go
Where
ahead.
is your art at the project you did at Daytona Beach? She wanted to know where was it at.
It was that it, once it was that it started off, it was well, this is probably about at least 8, 9 years ago. It started off at communities, I can't think of the community center, but eventually ended up at Bethune-Cookman. And they didn't have a Bethune-Cookman didn't really have a gallery art museum because but we did have a performing arts center section, and we were able to exhibit there, sort of like where they have the big auditorium. So that's
Mm-hmm.
what had to work during that time, and got a chance to, you know, really meet some great people and stuff, you know. And I do plan to go back in Florida. In fact, I had been like in Miami from time to time because I have friends that are out there too. So don't be surprised if I pop up in Florida. And if you have any recommendations about things of interest, let me know. And I love you know, going around the country and stuff and meeting with my family.
All right.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so we're going to sign off, and we'll be back tomorrow and next week like we always do.
Okay.
All right, so everybody continue to have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you.